Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. The Zetas have long predicted weather swings, from the start of Zeta Talk in 1995. They've attributed it to the influence of Planet X due to a swirling core heating the surface from the bottom up. And I quote, "All attempts to explain the changes based on global warming from the greenhouse effect will run into snags, as the weather will refuse to be predictable. Areas of the world which have been deserts throughout mankind's memory will become swamps under constant and repeated rains. Temperate climates used to periodic gentle rainfall will suffer intractable droughts. This will then switch about for no apparent reason. Violent storms, unusual weather patterns, severe and long-lasting droughts, increased frequency of hurricanes, torrential rains, and a general warming of the planet. Mankind will find its greatest problems with the weather to be its unpredictability." And this was a quote from Zeta Talk Heralding, written prior to July 15, 1995. Based on this prediction, I started a Weather Watch topic within Troubled Times, summarizing yearly. I was posting only outstanding weather, that which broke records, as in never before or never in the memory of man, and looking for broken records over a broad area, not just for a particular township or county. The summary from 1995 to 1999 shows the uptick during those 5 years. After that, as anyone paying attention knows, things only got worse. In 1995 and 1996, records were broken, but it was only a more extreme version of what might be called normal weather, affecting a single locale, but not yet a global affair. I quote from the Weather Watch summary for 1995 and 1996. During 1995, more hurricanes were named than ever before. It was the hottest year on record, following the hottest decade, with over 500 dying in a Chicago heat wave. Record snowstorms were recorded from Scandinavia to Buffalo, New York. Australia's Big Dry broke records, while many areas worldwide, such as New Jersey, were experiencing drought for the first time. During 1996, there were more major hurricanes than ever before recorded. Heat records were broken across the U.S. China's Qinghai province was devastated by the century's worst blizzard, while the U.S. East Coast was also buried in record snowfalls, the wettest year on record. Drought continued to be experienced for the first time in many places worldwide, such as Slovenia. Record-breaking deluges occurred, such as the 17-inch rainfall in Chicago. End quote from a Weather Watch topic within Troubled Times. In 1997, a new pattern emerged where large areas were being affected by severe weather, happening simultaneously in many parts of the world. I quote from the Weather Watch summary for 1997. During 1997, the U.S. West Coast and North Dakota were battered by record flooding in the spring. Antarctica continued to melt at a dramatic rate. Record snowfall in San Diego, Chile. During midsummer, the Nordic countries and U.S. Midwest and Argentina all experienced unusual and extreme heat waves, and record-breaking flooding occurred in Central Europe. By fall, the strongest El Niño in memory was causing simultaneous torrential rainfall in Somalia and Brazil, and intractable drought in Indonesia. Year-end found 1997 the hottest on record, with the most rainforest destroyed ever due to drought-induced fire. And this is the end of the 1997 quote from Weather Watch. In 1998, this pattern, where the entire globe seemed to be simultaneously in the grip of record-breaking weather extremes, strengthened. I quote again from the Weather Watch summary, this time for 1998. During 1998, severe weather tightened its grip, becoming the norm, battering nearby locales in different ways. As an example, on the same day on the east coast of the U.S., the Northeast was being deluged, high winds tore through North Carolina, and half of Florida was on fire. Ice storms in Quebec caused the province to borrow power for the first time ever, and bitter cold swept many parts of the world, such as Mexico, breaking records, while England sweltered in record heat. El Nino continued into 1998, the strongest ever recorded, with record-breaking flooding in Peru and San Francisco. This El Nino was then followed by the strongest La Nina ever. Fires raged out of control in the jungles of Indonesia, the Amazon, and Florida. Kenya rain was 500% above normal. A record number of 1,008 tornadoes tore through the U.S. Mechanicsville, New York, and Alabama experienced a level 5 on two different occasions, the strongest tornado possible. The hail in Louisiana, 1/2 foot across during July. Korea, China, and Slovakia experienced record-breaking deluges almost simultaneously. Where 1997 had been the hottest year on record, 1998 broke that record. And this is the end of the quote from Weather Watch for 1998. By the end of 1999, the last year summarized, the world map for the year, where I had been putting symbols on the map to indicate broken records, looked like a pox or a plague. Where in 1995 there was a scattering, by 1999 the map was literally covered, these symbols overlapping each other. At this point, I felt the situation was obvious, the weather was not normal, and there was no need to spend time documenting this trend. I quote again from the Weather Watch, this time the summary for 1999. During 1999, the hurricane season ran late, and southern hemisphere cyclones came early. Hurricanes lined up one behind the other and marched across the Atlantic. The entire globe seemed under attack at the same time, with Hurricane Dennis threatening South Carolina, Tropical Storm Cindy ravaging West Africa, Tropical Storm Wendy striking Hong Kong, and Hurricane Greg assaulting the west coast of Mexico almost simultaneously. The unprecedented west-east Hurricane Floyd, a Category 5, came late in the season. Supercyclone 5B devastated India in November, and an unprecedented Hurricane Lothar battered Europe in December. The entire globe likewise seemed to be battling floods and mudslides, with flooding along the Caspian Sea in July, in New York City and South Carolina, and Russia's North Caucasus in August, in Uganda and India's Manipur and Somalia and Bulgaria and South Korea and Ghana, and Spain and Honduras in September, in Mexico's Tabasco and the Congo and Nepal, in India's West Bengal and South Africa and Cambodia in October, in Ethiopia and Greece and Peru and Italy and Vietnam and Colombia and Brazil and New Zealand in November, and in Thailand and Yemen and Bosnia and Venezuela and Indonesia, and Nigeria, and the Philippines in December. An entrenched drought on the east coast of the U.S. threatened to be the worst in memory, with 7 states issuing drought advisories, and 3/4 of all streams and rivers registering record or near-record lows. More than 18 wildfires swept across Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Utah, Washington, and California. At the same time, the Manitoba regions of Canada had wildfires out of control, and 2,000 brush fires burned out of control across Brazil. Israel had 7 months of drought, with the Sea of Galilee at its lowest level in at least a century. Heat waves broke records in Europe and North America, and the warming trend created melting in the Arctic as well as the Antarctic. End of the quote from Weather Watch summary for 1999. So I return again to what the Zetas predicted in 1995. Does this not sound like they were on target? quoting from Zeta Talk, violent storms, unusual weather patterns, severe and long-lasting droughts, increased frequency of hurricanes, torrential rains, and a general warming of the planet. Mankind will find its greatest problem with the weather to be its unpredictability. And that was a repeat quote from Zeta Talk Heralding, written prior to July 15, 1995. Note that no one else was predicting these weather patterns in 1995 or during these years leading into the year 2000, except for Zeta Talk. Thus, this is an excellent example of Zeta Talk prediction accuracy and one of the reasons for its notoriety around the world. Snow in summer was predicted in early 2000 by the Zetas, a sign of a pending pole shift, and is just starting to occur this year in the year 2005. And I quote, "Snowfall in Somalia in June, the first snowfall ever for this tropical country on the equator." End of the quote from news articles. And what had Zeta Talk predicted some years before on January 12, 2000? And I quote from Zeta Talk during 2000. "As we stated in 1995, severe and intractable drought, drought and deluge swings, very cold summers, relayed in the past in ancient reports of what the Chinese called a world cycle, meaning the approach of another pole shift where snow fell in summer." End of the quote from Zeta Talk during 2000, written just prior to January 12, 2000. By the end of 2003, the erratic temperatures was confusing fruit trees and rose bushes, which were blooming in the fall in France and in the U.S. The World Meteorological Organization published their concerns, saying, in essence, that the world's weather has gone haywire. 10,000 people died from extreme heat in France. September was the warmest September on record, and this was followed by an October, which was the warmest October on record. There were 500-plus tornadoes recorded in May 2003 in the U.S., a record almost double the normal number, and temperature swings of 50 degrees within one day were recorded. Up to this point, the erratic weather was being caused by volcanic activity under the seas in Indonesia, the true cause of El Nino, and the effect of an increasingly churning earth core causing friction on the surface of the globe. The permafrost was beginning to melt from the bottom up. This is not the result of global warming, as warmer air merely results in increased turbulence in the air. I was getting reports from folks living in Alaska, their houses sinking on one side into the permafrost, their roads waving, dipping, and lakes and ponds forming on the surface. Very worrisome. But as the end of 2003 approached and the Earth moved round in her orbit to encounter Planet X, which had recently arrived from the direction of Orion and was standing in her path, a new factor in the weather emerged, a global wobble in the Earth. The Atlantic Rift, which was created as the continents are torn apart during pole shifts, what's commonly called continental drift, but which the Zetas have referred to as continental rip, is in essence a third magnet. The lava formed from this very vertical rip, which goes all the way from Iceland and down to South Africa, it has a not exactly a straight line, kind of forms an S, but nevertheless, you can view it from one side of the globe and see the whole rift. And this magma, forming from fresh rips, hardens pretty quickly, and during a pole shift, when there's a strong influence of magnetic alignment and the like, it becomes a magnet. All the new lava hardens with its magnetic field, all these little iron particles going in one direction, which is, in essence, what a magnet is. Well, Planet X is the bully magnet. It's 4 times the diameter of Earth, 23 times its mass. The Earth, with its core, which is magnetized, is a second magnet, but a smaller magnet. And on the surface of the Earth, the Atlantic Rift is a very minor magnet, but nevertheless a third magnet. As Planet X is rounding the sun, slightly to the south, rounding the sun's south pole, coming toward Earth, which is like frozen like deer in the headlights in front of it, it had to align with the sun's magnetic flow lines. Planet X comes too close to the sun for its size. This is because it has a sling orbit, zooms in, heading right toward the sun in a gravity plunge, but because of a gravity repulsion force, really another factor of the gravity particle flows, well explained in Zeta Talk as a repulsion force. It didn't hit the sun, but skids to a stop and kind of screeches around the south pole, moving up to on its way to a straight line sling through, up south to north, had to align to the magnetic lines around the sun, magnetic flow lines. Now, these come out of the North Pole, wrap around and go into the South Pole. When you're close to the sun, these are very tight lines right around the middle. You can see this with a magnet. If you remember the child's game, you have a sheet of glass, you put a magnet underneath, you drop some iron flakes on the top, tap the glass, you can form a magnetic field around that magnet, and around the middle of that magnet, the field are tight little circles. So coming slightly from the south toward the sun, to round the sun and move off slightly to the north, a 32-degree angle to the sun's middle, which is commonly known as the ecliptic, that plane of planets slung out around the sun like Saturn's rings. The sun found that it had to point its north pole very much toward the sun's south pole, slinging its south pole outward toward the earth as it was moving around the sun. Now, what did this cause in the earth? Remember, magnets want to either align end to end or side by side. And in this position, Planet X was asking the earth to align side by side, leaning its north pole toward the sun, beyond what the Earth was accustomed to doing. The sun has a magnetic alignment that's static. The Earth and Mercury line up exactly the same, north-south. It's not exactly up and down as the planets are sitting in the plane of the ecliptic, a little bit catawampus, but that's what the sun is doing, too. But Planet X was coming in with a lean in a slightly different direction because it was trying to align with the sun's magnetic flow lines, being so very close to the sun. So this was drawing the sun's north pole to tip a little bit toward the sun during this year, 2003, and this was creating that extreme extra sunlight for the northern hemisphere during 2003, where 10,000 people died in France, etc., the extreme heat waves, and the number of tornadoes in the U.S. For those wanting proof that this tugging on the Atlantic Rift occurs, I point to what has been called by ourselves at the Zeta Talk site, the global quakes. They've been registering on the live seismographs since March 2003. I have a record of this in the quakes section, also in what is called the sweeps section, where we started documenting earthquakes accompanying these global shudderings. Here, periodically, the whole globe shudders simultaneously, every live seismograph around the world showing this, when the Atlantic Rift is either facing or is in opposition on the dark side of the globe. Do go into that quake section and take a look. It's dramatic when you see it. Why would this be? Why would these global shudderings occur when at 12 UTC and 0 UTC, UTC being when Greenwich is facing the sun at high noon, with universal time, I think, or something like that. In any case, consistently, these graphs are showing approximately 12 UTC and approximately 0 UTC, which is when Greenwich is at midnight around the other side of the globe. I've called these the face and dark points for brevity, and this is documentation on the Zeta Talk website, And this pattern is unmistakable, and this is the USGS own live seismograph charts. There is no other explanation for this pattern but that Planet X is in the vicinity and tugging on the Atlantic Rift. And I quote from Zeta Talk, "The Atlantic Rift is skewed to the west in the northern hemisphere and then to the east in the southern hemisphere, following the deepest cleft between the continents as they rip apart during what is commonly called the continental drift. At the point where the Atlantic Rift is either faces or is in opposition to Planet X, this tugging to align occurs, creating the global quakes noted on live seismographs only during this past year for the Earth when Planet X has been in the vicinity." And this is a quote from Zeta Talk, Earth Wobble, written July 17, 2004. And indeed, these global shudderings only started recording in March of 2003. Then 3 weeks later, there was another one in April of 2003. And now we've had them periodically, every few days. Beyond the baking in the northern hemisphere during 2003, this created what the Zetas call weather wobbles. This was written in response to comments about the weather on December 5, 2004, and I quote from these comments. "About 100 miles an hour gusty winds blew into Tokyo, December 5, 2004, and suburbs of Tokyo, damaging buildings and affecting all transportation. After this gusty wind, temperatures went up over 25 degrees centigrade, like a September climate. This is the highest temperature in December ever recorded." And another quote. "Storms strike in the heart of Europe. Winds gusting up to 180 kilometers, or 112 miles an hour, were recorded in Wendelstein in Bavaria. The massive storm also swept across Scandinavia on Thursday, disrupting land, sea, and air traffic." And another quote. "Southern California storms dumped snow even in the desert regions." This was recorded November 22, 2004. "The weather system, which developed in British Columbia and swept into California via Nevada, is called an inside slider for its rare approach into Southern California from the northeast instead of the typical route through the Pacific coast." End of quote. Now, what's notable here in these three locations is that these winds were vertical, north-south, rather than coming in along with the prevailing westerlies or the normal route of breezes blowing in that part of the world. And these spots are situated about a third of the way around the globe, Tokyo, the west coast, and over there in Bavaria. The Zetas responded with what we have called weather wobbles, a piece written in response to these reports on December 6, 2004, and I quote, "If the Earth has been in a wobble since last May 2004, at this early date, a relatively gentle tug on the southern portion of the highly magnetized Atlantic Rift, was this a factor in the record typhoon and hurricane seasons? Most certainly. Now that a more violent polar wobble has started, will the weather be exempt? Hardly. Where the Earth is pulled, the atmosphere is not, and lingers where it was while the crust moved beneath it. Accounts of sudden windstorms, unexpected and out of season, are occurring. Jerking the Earth about under her cloak of air also creates temperature changes. It has been noted by those plotting the lurch that the Earth appears to be swinging in a figure eight, one loop of which swings the north pole of Earth forward toward the sun over India, creating an uncharacteristically warm spot in Siberia in the polar regions. As the Earth lurches from a position where the North Pole is pushed away, and then a rebound where it tilts forward, would this not push Japan suddenly under warmer air from the southeast, and create a vertical airflow likewise from the southeast in Bavaria, as well as sudden fierce storms from the northeast in California? Have these been reported? Indeed. Will this trend continue and become more extreme? The push of Earth's vulnerable North Pole away will occur with more violence. The rebound back to align with the sun's dominant voice will occur with more violence, and the weather will follow." End quote from Zeta Talk, Weather Wobbles, written December 6, 2004. What was this polar wobble the Zetas were referring to? This is more than the Atlantic Rift being tugged to stay in alignment with Planet X, or the Northern Hemisphere being baked because the Earth's North Pole is leaning toward Planet X, kind of trying to line up side by side and lean in the same direction, as Planet X swings its South Pole out toward the Earth, its North Pole, you know, kind of glued to the Sun's South Pole. Has something changed? We were hearing that description of a wobble caused by the North Pole of the Earth leaning along with Planet X toward the Sun. Now we've got a polar wobble. What's this? Indeed, something has changed, as to switch from its position, aligned along the Sun's magnetic flow lines beneath the ecliptic, where they flow into the Sun's South Pole. The magnetic flow goes into the Sun's South Pole. To be aligned with the Sun's magnetic flow lines above the ecliptic, where magnetic particles flow out of the Sun's North Pole, Planet X will have to literally switch about in space, turning its North Pole away from the Sun, pointing it toward Earth, so that above the ecliptic, Planet X can be pointing its South Pole toward the Sun and its North Pole out. This has devastating consequences for the Earth. It does this very slowly, a process that started in 2004, in the fall of 2004, and is still ongoing today in 2005. Ultimately, this pointing the North Pole toward Earth as it does this slow swinging about in space will result in 3 days of darkness in the Northern Hemisphere, with the North Pole of Earth being pushed literally away from the Sun, so that the Sun does not seem to rise or set, but is just a mere glow over the horizon, something the Bible has predicted, 3 days of darkness. In 2004, then, reports were coming in the fall. This from Utah on December 5th and 6th. On December 5th, sunrise barely east of direct south. Wife and I looked out east facing window, which always lets in some sun year-round. Wife says, "Where's the sun?" No direct sunlight coming in the window. Went outside to see the sunrise barely east of direct south. All shadows almost directly north. December 6th. The sunrise was normal in the east again. People thought I was nuts when I spoke of it. End of this quote. A process the Zetas call the drunken lurch. It's what's going on. Planet X pushing the Earth's North Pole away. Periodically, as the Earth turns, either showing its North Pole when Canada comes around to face the Sun, or hiding it on the other side during Canada's night. And when it's on the other side during Canada's night, allowing it to spring back when it's hidden behind the curve of the Earth during the evening in Canada. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Drunken Lurch. We have previously explained an Earth wobble which became evident in early 2004 and accentuated during the summer as Planet X leaned along the Sun's magnetic flow lines, pulling the Earth into magnetic compliance with its tilt. When Planet X slowly swings its North Pole round in a clockwise direction, whither the Earth? The magnetic poles of Earth present themselves to the Sun each once a day at diametrically opposing times. When North America faces the Sun and Planet X, the North Pole is exposed in its location just above the Canadian Northwest Territories. As the North Pole of Planet X is coming into play during the slow revolution of Planet X in place, the North Pole of Earth leans away from this hose of magnetic particles, causing the Sun to seem too far to the south. This effect lingers until the South Pole of Earth comes into view, dawn just south of Tasmania, at which point the North Pole of Earth is now out of view and negated. The Earth now attempts to move back into alignment with the Sun, the dominant magnet in the solar system, overcompensating in this wobble back to place the Sun temporarily too far to the north for Siberia and Europe. The drunken lurch back and forth will become more accentuated. And this is a quote from Drunken Lurch, written November 19, 2004, Zeta Talk. We now had two types of weather wobbles ongoing simultaneously, both pulling the Earth under its blanket of air and oceans, both of which are more free to move than the landmass and concern about. I like to use the analogy of someone carrying a bowl of soup. Move the soup bowl suddenly, the soup falls on your foot. It doesn't have to go with a bowl. And likewise, the atmosphere and our oceans do not have to turn with the earth, although in general there is some drag and they pull along. What effect does this double wobble, which developed in late 2004, have on the jet stream? Something the Zetas call the jet stream tornadoes. This quote from Pennsylvania came on May 24, 2005, and I quote, "I have lived my whole life in eastern Pennsylvania, and this past month or two have noticed a change in the weather system's direction. Normally, the flow is west to east. Now the low-pressure systems are moving from the Midwest area into a southeast direction. It's keeping us in a cool climate here at about 10 to 15 degrees below normal. In addition to this, we've had more nor'easters than normal, which usually happens in winter. The low-pressure area goes off the coast and reformulates with the ocean and travels northeast as a large rain-making low." End of the quote from Pennsylvania. And what do the Zetas have to say about these jet stream tornadoes? And I quote, "We have stressed at the very start of Zeta Talk's saga that the weather would get increasingly extreme, with droughts and deluges occurring and switching about in an unpredictable manner, and that this includes unpredictable changes in the jet stream. The jet stream is affected primarily by the rotation of the earth, the slow roll, which pulls the earth under her blanket of air and creates swirling in the temperate regions, the prevailing westerlies, as cold air from the poles rushes to drop into voids created by this motion. The jet stream is affected secondarily by warm and cold spots, warm over land masses that are more quickly heated or cooled than the ocean, which can circulate and maintain a more even distribution within its depths. Hot air is lighter than cold and rises, cold heavier and drops, and thus the storm systems attempting to equalize the density of air. The temperature and density and direction of air masses can be determined, and thus the weatherman has historically offered predictions, but these predictions have become increasingly difficult, in part because of the earth wobble, which jerks the earth about under her mantle of air, often at cross currents to the jet stream. A new development is tornado swirls within the jet stream, where the stream turns round upon itself rather than proceeding high in the upper atmosphere in its traditional directions. Tornadoes, as any schoolchild learns, are caused by the rapid dropping of cold air through a lighter, warm air mass, a sinkhole that becomes like a black hole for gravity particles, an irresistible pull for cold air in the vicinity. On a larger scale, hurricanes and their counterparts, the typhoon and cyclone, are large swirls on the move, attempting to equalize air pressure. If tornadoes and hurricanes can occur in the lower atmosphere on a local level, why could they not occur in the upper atmosphere? This is clearly not caused by global warming, which has raised the air a fraction of a degree, nor has global warming been responsible for the permafrost or glaciers or poles melting from the bottom up. This, as we have often stated, is due to the core of the earth swirling about under the influence of Planet X, which has likewise created increases in volcanic activity worldwide. But the turbulence in the volatile atmosphere is in response to sudden changes in the direction of flow due to an increasingly violent earth wobble. At first, during the wobble, the breeze blows gently, then grows gusty with distinct north-south wind formations, and finally begins to swirl as in any large air mass attempting to equalize either pressure or temperature over a large area will do. Tornado behavior in a jet stream will result in unexpected turnabouts in temperature and storm systems, a pattern noted already in 2004 when several hurricanes turned back to attack the east coast of the United States, or change direction contrary to their predicted and traditional path. More of this will follow, as the earth wobble is not going away or lessening its grip. It will, quite the contrary, proceed to more horrors while those in charge of the cover-up in Washington, D.C., in the White House, fiddle with the truth like Nero fiddling while Rome burned. The outcome for these politicians and power mongers will be no better than Nero's. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Jet Stream Tornadoes, written May 25, 2005. So where are we now in August of 2005? Here's some recent reports during 2005. Heavy rain in South Africa during May for the first time in memory. Extreme heat in Las Vegas in May, 110 degrees, while simultaneously New Jersey shivered at 49 degrees. Australia struck in May by tornadoes and electrical storms the likes not seen in the 175 years of record keeping. Meanwhile, the Great Lakes are reported to be warmer than ever, with currents in the Atlantic becoming quiescent as the Greenland coal sink no longer pulls the Gulf Stream along. Spain reporting that their famous Basque wave has mysteriously disappeared. Canada reports the entire country is above average in temperatures by midsummer as searing heat draws up through the Midwest and Arctic heat wave. India experienced its heaviest rainfall ever recorded in late July, dumping 37 inches on the financial hub of Mumbai. If the weather was bizarre and extreme in 2004 and 2005, it appears to be continuing to top records. The 2005 hurricane and typhoon season arrived earlier and with more vehemence than in 2004. And I quote from a CNN article, "Hurricanes are getting stronger." The analysis by climatologist Carrie Emanuel of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology shows for the first time that major storms spinning in both the Atlantic and the Pacific since the 1970s have increased in duration and intensity by about 50%. Emanuel reached his conclusions by analyzing data collected from actual storms rather than using computer models. Before this study, most researchers believed global warming's contribution to powerful hurricanes was too slight to accurately measure. Most forecasts don't have climate change making a real difference in tropical storms until the year 2050 or later. This year marked the first time on record that the Atlantic spawned four named storms by early July, as well as the earliest Category 4 storm on record. Hurricanes are ranked on an intensity scale of 1 to 5. This was a quote from CNN, dated August 1, 2005. What it's saying in the article is that, according to global warming computer models, our storm systems should not have changed at all, not even a measurable increase, but we have a 50% increase. This is not due to global warming. If the computer models aren't able to forecast these increased storm systems, perhaps it's because they're not taking into account the right factors. Again, I refer to the Zeta Talk prediction in 1995, where they stated the unpredictable weather that was about to astonish mankind would not be from global warming. And I quote, "Weather changes heralding the giant comet's approach will at first be within normal parameters. As long as meteorologists can find a similar pattern on the books, or an old-timer can be found to regale us with tales of the old days, no one will get unduly alarmed. The weather, after all, is a constant source of conversation. All attempts to explain the changes based on global warming from the greenhouse effect will run into snags, as the weather will refuse to be predictable. Humanity has come to expect predictability in the weather. Even the monsoons of the East, or the hurricanes that hit the eastern United States, are expected and prepared for as they are predictable. A key change to which one could point is the warming of the Earth's oceans around the globe. This has been measured as a 6-inch rise worldwide on all the beaches. The waters have risen because they are warmer, and warm water takes up more room than cold water, as all elementary physics books will report. How is it that the oceans, so very deep and so very cold, have warmed up? Is it the almost imperceptible rise in the temperature of the air a degree or two as reported to date? Since heat rises, why would this slight rise affect the oceans? Meteorologists will tell you that the effect of air warming is air turbulence, not warmer oceans. The oceans are warmer because the core of the Earth has heated up, and it does so in response to its brother, Planet X, coming closer. This was again from Zeta Talk Heralding, written prior to July 15, 1995. Well, if things aren't going to return to normal, just how bad is it going to get prior to the pole shift? I quote from Zeta Talk Weather Extremes, written recently. We warned at the start of Zeta Talk in 1995 that unpredictable weather extremes, switching about from drought to deluge, would occur and increase on a lineal basis up until the pole shift. Where this occurred steadily, it has only recently become undeniable. Zeta Talk, and only Zeta Talk, warned of these weather changes at that early date. Our early warnings spoke to the issue of global heating from the core outward, hardly global warming, a surface or atmospheric issue, but caused by consternation in the core. Affected by the approach of Planet X, which was by then starting to zoom rapidly toward the inner solar system for its periodic passage, the core was churning, melting the permafrost and glaciers and riling up volcanoes. When the passage did not occur as expected in 2003, because Planet X had stalled in the inner solar system, we explained the increasing weather irregularities in the context of global warming that had ensued. Weather wobbles where the Earth is suddenly forced under air masses, churning them. This evolved by 2005 into a looping jet stream, loops breaking away and turning like a tornado to affect the air masses underneath. Meanwhile, on planet Earth, droughts had become more intractable and deluges positively frightening. Temperature swings bringing snow in summer to the tropics and searing heat in Arctic regions, with the violence of storms increasing in number and ferocity. Is this as bad as it will get prior to the pole shift, when hurricane-force winds will sweep the Earth and every region of the globe will emerge with a new climate and geography? Has the lineal increase we predicted in 1995 reached its climax? We are not here with good tidings, nor were we here with good tidings in 1995. Zeta Talk, blunt and honest, is not for the faint at heart, but for those willing to take a serious warning and act on it. The coastlines will get increasingly inhospitable as storms formed over the oceans can develop into a howling rage that dissipates over land. As we have stated, hurricane-force storms will not develop into superstorms, more violent than man has experienced, but will form in places not previously experienced and will be more consistently strong and destructive. In some places around the globe, this will make coastlines uninhabitable, a place where crops are grown or fish harvested, but where humans do not reside or sleep soundly. Where deserts have formed based on geology, mountain ranges blocking rain clouds or the atmosphere depleted of rain during a long trip over land masses, this will change as the direction of wind flow changes. Lands used to regular rains, now suffering droughts, may find these droughts turning their landmass into deserts. Rainforests are likewise formed by geology and wind currents, and these may fear being washed away as rain comes not only more often, but with a greater load of water picked up by fast-moving air currents traveling over large bodies of water. Drought or deluge, there will be few places on Earth not affected by one of these extremes, and all of this affects the success of crops. Temperature extremes, and in particular temperature swings, will increase, so that the seasons almost blend into one another. If summer is expected to be a time of extreme heat and winter extreme cold, man may find his summer cool with odd brief snowstorms, and winter confusing the crops wanting to go into their annual hibernation. The key will be the unpredictability as a looping jet stream and increasing extremes of high and low pressure over land will force the atmosphere into unexpected directions. Where does this place man as he learns of the likelihood of a pole shift caused by the passage of a rogue planet, Planet X? Most will stubbornly stay in place, refusing to contemplate the unpleasant and preferring to accept any explanation the establishment proffers. Suffering will increase, but will result in riots and angry outbursts or illness from malnutrition and depressed immune systems, or the psychological depression that comes from a sense of hopelessness. Those who have decided to live and help others to do so will find the argument, whether to stay or go, tipping in the direction of a move. Coastal areas may be pleasant and river basins rich with delta soil, and the commerce that has grown up near ports and great rivers providing jobs, but the tribulations of a self-sufficient family home in the hinterland will seem increasingly worth it. This is the push the weather extremes will bring. Add to this increasing volcanic and quake activity, making the fault lines unattractive and life in crowded cities likely to be suffering from collapse as their infrastructure is shattered and pulled apart. All of these matters will speak to those who want to survive in a voice louder than any reassurance from the establishment. Make your plans, cut your losses, and get out of harm's way to a place where you can at least have a chance of feeding your family and surviving the weather extremes. And this is the end of the quote from Zeta Talk Weather Extremes, written in July 2005. Some people are already making their adjustments. I quote from an article titled Floridians Leaving for Good. After three hurricanes in a decade, including two in the past 10 months, the Campbells are now planning to sell their Florida Panhandle homes and move away from the water for good. In the meantime, they're living in their small motorhome parked at a friend's house on the mainland and making plans to move to South Florida, someplace inland. "We really love Florida, but we're leaving the beach," Linda Campbell said. This was a quote from a newspaper article dated July 14th. Well, this may be a step in the right direction, but things are not going to get better in South Florida, and particularly for Florida, which will disappear under the waves altogether during the pole shift. Well, what will the weather be like then during the hour of the pole shift? Please bear in mind that this is the hour of the shift when the Earth is going to turn 90 degrees under her blanket of air in the course of an hour. This is not describing the weather in the weeks leading up to this hour, which in and of themselves will have their own irregularities, but rather just the hour of the pole shift. And I quote from Zeta Talk. "At the shift, the surface of the Earth will move in just under an hour, more than a quarter turn. Where massive earthquakes and tidal waves occur when this motion stops, hurricane-force winds worldwide occur during this shift. Humans are used to predictability in regard to violent winds, even in the case of tornadoes and wind shears that drop planes suddenly. The weather patterns are such that these destructive winds can occur, spoken of as tornado weather or conditions likely to produce wind shear. Hurricanes, or their eastern equivalent, typhoons, give lots of warning, not only that they are brewing, but also by increasing wind force that they are on the way. During the shift, the atmosphere of the Earth does several things all at once. One, it drags along with the Earth to which it is attracted, being primarily more involved with gravity attraction straight down. Do not the waters in your oceans move with the Earth as it turns? The atmosphere is an ocean too, just lighter and therefore more mobile. Two, it moves as a mass, pushing on air in other places and likewise itself being pushed. Thus, even in those places on the Earth which are not moving during the shift, being pivot points, the air is turbulent. And three, it swirls as circular motion in air masses is the response to conflicting forces, as seen in the circular motion of tornadoes and hurricanes. Due to the amount of mobility, with all air masses in motion, and to the pulling upward and ripping away of the upper stratas, pressure at any given point is not as extreme as one might think. Yes, the atmosphere is in motion, and yes, the whipping and confused winds might reach hurricane force during this hour and be unpredictable for several hours after the shift, but one should not assume a force of winds above what the world experiences today. Your hurricanes and typhoons represent what occurs when air masses attempt to move against each other, given their density and gravity attraction and inertia. These same factors are in place, are predominant during the pole shift. Humans wishing to prepare for these violent winds should anticipate a force equal to their familiar hurricanes, not tornado force, although tornadoes will be spawned. Stay below the Earth's surface, lie low, and tie down everything you wish to find when it's over." This was a quote from Zeta Talk, Violent Winds, written January 15th, 1996, a very early Zeta Talk. Some predictions have been made, particularly on the coast-to-coast program by Major Ed Dames, that winds up to 300 or 500 miles per hour might occur during a pole shift. According to the Zetas, this will not occur. And the reason they give is that our hurricanes max out where they do due to the nature and density of our atmosphere. It can only move so fast given its density, one air mass pushing against another, and this kind of motion is in place today around the globe in our storm systems. In other words, if it could move faster and push, you know, low pressure, high pressures against each other, it would already be doing so. Thus, the Zeta's prediction is that where these storms will become more frequent and more violent, they will not become superstorms. They will not become anything outside of what we experience today. They made this prediction in 1995, and it's held. Once again, Zeta Talk accuracy demonstrated, and the Zetas right again. This will hold true for the time remaining until the pole shift, and it will hold true during that hour of the pole shift. Hurricane force winds worldwide, but no worse than our current hurricanes. So what will the weather be like then after the pole shift when the oceans have risen approximately 675 feet above their current levels and thus the waves washing pretty close to all land remaining? And I quote from Zeta Talk, drizzle. Drizzle occurs most certainly during the months following the shift and thereafter depending upon location. The atmosphere is low, clouds low, as the atmosphere was stripped away during the shift and must rebuild. Thus, clouds being low is like a continuous fog, and fog settles out in the form of rain or drizzle upon any slight temperature change. If the land is downwind from a large water source, like a lake or ocean, then certainly there will be fog and drizzle until the atmosphere rebuilds. If the land is high, inland, away from air passing over water, and then over land where there are temperature changes, then there will be no drizzle and perhaps even dry air. Continuous drizzle has been predicted for the world for 25 years after the pole shift. The rains predicted during the pole shift or deluge are a result of the hurricane force winds that whip over the oceans and then inland. And this process, after the existing poles melt and the land masses shrink, will continue to some degree as ocean breezes will be close to land. It is no secret that rain often is incited by dust, water forming around a particle, and this process will be in place worldwide. It is the rain, to some degree, which cleans the air of the fine volcanic dust that will blow about otherwise, seemingly endlessly. Thus, there is a relationship during the 25 years we have predicted for volcanic bloom to the time and place for the continuous drizzle. This is not to say that survivors must live in their raincoats, as this will be a reducing phenomenon over the 25 years. And this was a quote from Zeta Talk, Drizzle, written in the Maine on November 30th, 2002. Is the entire world, then, to be under fog and almost continuous drizzle? According to the Zetas, deserts will reestablish in places where the land mass is large enough to cause moist air to drop its load before arriving. And I quote from Zeta Talk on deserts. How will the situation change after the shift? The Americas will find the air masses curling around from the new equator coming across the massively flooded Canadian lands, the flooded Mississippi Valley, and the flooded Amazon basin, so that ample rainfall will drop on formerly desert areas of Arizona and Mexico. What is now the west coast of the Americas, on both the north and south continents, will find the curling air streams coming off the Pacific, dropping their moisture as today on the coastlines. Thus, the Americas are not expected to have desert areas in the aftertimes. Africa and Europe will string out along the new equator, too, with the curling air masses flowing over the Atlantic before passing over all but the inland portions of the Sahara Desert. The Sudan, thus, will find its deserts continuing, as air reaching it has already dropped on the land along the coast, while encountering cooler air coming down from the new South Pole, India, leaving little for the thirsty Sahara. Due to the massive flooding in the lowlands of Siberia, air current curling from the new equator toward the Gobi will be moisture-laden, and thus these desert lands will find their climate changing. The deserts of Western Australia will be underwater, with no lack of rainfall on that portion of Australia remaining. And this was a quote from Zeta Talk Deserts, written on July 15, 2002. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.